Whilst the estate was a playground for some, for many it was their entire livelihood, and in the 1920s and early 30s, farming was on its knees. The recorded memories of some of the farmers and farm tenants show that not much had changed in generations. John Chugg from Red Deer Farm recalls working with horses. Harold Checkitts from Walcott Farm remembers the mushroom harvest. And Raymond Gerard talks about hop picking at Mr. Page's farm at High Green.
You would have a horse and cart, and you would fill it full of manure, take it out onto the fields, and you would spread it with a fork, which was extremely hard work. You used to be able to plough an acre a day with two horses, which if you walked behind horses ploughing was a long way, up and down all day. Also, you had the binder as well. We had an old binder pulled by horses. A binder made sheaves of corn.
Oh.
Afterwards, as children, we used to have to go along and what you call stoop them up.
Oh, right.
You put so many of them up together.
Yes.
And then the wind would dry them out nicely. Very often you'd see a fox pop out of one or pheasants use them to roost on the top.
In the 20s, especially from about 1925-6 onwards, times were extremely bad on the farm. I remember the people going broke in the area, but we were very lucky at Walcott because we were saved from that in about 1926 and 7 by an enormous crop of mushrooms in one of the fields. And that field became white with mushrooms. And Uncle Joe, who was a very morose man, he hardly ever spoke to anybody except with a grunt. Those mushrooms meant that on some days he went on the dray with a load of mushrooms to market in Pershore as many as 4 or 5 times in a day. And the people in Pershore used to say that they'd actually seen him smile for the first time in his life. And that, you know, really meant quite a difference.
Pages had the farm in High Green. We used to go up there at weekends and everything. I can remember the Up Yard first. It used to be outside, you had cribs and everything. And then after that, he had a hop machine. He used to draw the hops in the daytime and then pocket them at night because my dad, Uncle Charlie and Uncle Albert, they used to go down at night after they finished work on the estate and that, have the tea, then they should back down there about 6 o'clock and worked about 10 o'clock, pocketing the hops up and everything. It was a big concern up there.
As well as hops, there was widespread fruit growing and orchards everywhere. Elizabeth Troughton remembers all the apple varieties at home farm, and Raymond Gerard recalls Mr. Page's soft fruit operation.
There was a lovely orchard there, which sadly now has got so old that the trees are all falling down, but it had every sort of apple, Blenheim orange and Newton Wonders and Princess Pippins and Worcester Pemains and Warner Kings, and apples that would carry you all through the year. Halfway down the drive, there was a shed there which they said was the apple shed, but I'm told years ago they used to have the harvest supper in that shed.
High Green Road, behind there, that was all fruit trees and soft fruit. He used to say, pick the fruit and take it to Persia Market. Later on, he went in with somebody from Bromyard, which was Bayliss. Page and Bayliss, they joined up together. Uh-huh. And he used to pick the fruit and take it up to Liverpool every week. There was 6 or 7 different types of plums. Victorias, Banks's, Persia Purples, egg plums. Then you used to have raspberries, strawberries, loganberries, gooseberries as well. He used to do a big concern he had.
Inevitably, we've only been able to make a few recordings which stretch back as far as the pre-war days. It was a time when the estate was practically self-sufficient. Here are two examples. Croom's Wood supplied almost all the timber needed on the estate, and lime putty was made in pits in the estate yard, as Malcolm Walford and Maurice Sherwood recall.
It was a great big Dutch barn-shaped building, a massive saw driven by an engine, no electric then, David. And the timber was brought in from the woods or covers and manhandled onto the saw bench. And this saw blade was probably about 8 foot in diameter. And the men would handle it onto the trolley and it would saw down the tree. And eventually what was the tree would be sawn down, transferred across to the carpenter shop, made into doors, window ledges, window frames. And if it was needed for farming, it would be moved up the road to the pickle shed, which was then used for dipping and then made for gates, five bar gates, fencing, and anything to use on farms. But the sawmill was the source of the cutting of the trees, and it was about two men employed there full time. A horrendous noise, dust from the sawdust, and it was amazing what they did from the initial tree to the window frame being put in the house.
There was lime pits in Purton, not far from Purton Church. There's a bank there called Lime Kiln Bank. Half a dozen men, I was told, was employed there, all under the estate, digging lime out. And on the estate yard, before it was all altered to what it is now, there was big tanks set into the ground. And if it was too wet to work out on site, everybody had to come back to the yard, fill these tanks of water, and then tip ordinary lime into these pits, no masks, no protective clothing, and stir this lime till it was made into a lot, what we call lime putty. And that was used in plaster work, what we call parging up the chimneys, parging behind the tiles. And we had a 45 rung pole ladder, which frightened me to death, which took four men to raise. A lot of times it was up against the outside of Seven Bank House. And by the time you'd gone up this ladder, the plaster was set in the bucket. And I've had that happen a lot of times.